Not a con.
I think originally Froggy had invited Linus Torvalds to come here to speak to you about Linux and open source software, but unfortunately Mr. Torvalds is a little bit busy and was unable to make it here. But since any good convention requires at least one Finn to participate, you got the next best thing, which is me. My name is Niklas Lindros. Online I'm known as Gore. Please excuse my not perfect English. It's not my native language.
My name is Chris Ragusa, also known as Bamba. English is my native language. No apology necessary. Now, I'm just curious. I know all of you guys. Have you guys ever mudded? Do you know what the muds are? Okay. You have? Okay. And you have? All right. Do you want to go right into the introduction?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Since there seems to be non-believers present here today, I'm going to give a brief introduction about what a MUD is. MUD, or MUDs, it's an acronym for multi-user dungeon, and in some cases, multi-user dimensions. They're text-based adventure games in which multiple users can interact and solve quests and adventure around over the internet. Now, MUDs are the precursors of the massive multi-user online RPGs that we see nowadays, for example, EverQuest and Ultima Online and World of Warcraft. For example, the initial planning of Ultima Online started in, was it 1991, by a bunch of MUD administrators. And today we have these really enormous games. One of the key points about the MUD, how it differs from normal computer games, is that it hasn't one specific goal to reach. It's a very cyclic world. It has no beginning, no end. You can keep on developing your character pretty much indefinitely. There is no score and no notion of winning or gaining success on the game.
Want to add something?
Yeah, I'll go right to my...
Go ahead.
Now we'll give you a brief overview of MUDs. What some of you may not realize is most MUDs are older than time itself. There are cave drawings in the south of France that show people using pole arms and ranged weapons against monsters, but unfortunately 30,000 years of lag hit us before we could get it productive again. There were some games that came up in the 60s and early 70s on the computers. In 1962, Space War was developed on the PDP-1. ARPANET came along in 1969, and I cannot recall the name of the fellow who invented this game. There was a text adventure called Adventure, and that was very popular in around 1972, and that was also on a PDP. The first game that most people agree started the MUDs harkens back to Essex University in 1979. It began as a student project. One of the graduate students was messing around with some code, and he got some buddies involved, and they wrote the first MUD. It was a collaborative effort. It was an effort that was subject to constant revision as hardware was improved, and even techniques as far as managing resources, particularly shared memory modules that would bog down the system and cause the rest of the university staff to complain, why are all these kids dragging us down? So after that, the next wrinkle they had was what we would call public access. They had a small educational network that the university was gracious enough to allow external users to dial in the wee hours of the day. And that meant other people in Britain could dial in and play this game in the morning. And it may not seem novel to you now because everybody seems to be wired 24/7, but back then they were truly creatures of the night. The next thing that happened was when they had hooked up to the ARPANET itself and then started distributing code. They had sent some up to Norway, to Sweden, to Australia, and to America. And with the open source code, people started tinkering it, making enhancements, sharing the ideas with others, like our good Linux. And that had fostered a growth in a whole bunch of different types. There were MUDs, there were MUSHes, there were MOOs, MUCs, as different people had different abilities and different intentions. I recall playing a very early MUD up in Iceland, and I went there just because when I was in the service, I had spent 2 years there, so I wanted to go back, and I was talking to people, and like, hey, do you remember this place, and we were doing this. But the MUD was boring because this was just a social experiment. All they wanted to do was build things to communicate with each other. So they built nifty seashells or animals that could transfer messages. They had no interest in the questing and the killing and the killing of other players that drives most of our MUDding experiences. And then came BatMUD. And let's see, well, we have these other things, but that's not for me.
Right. Now, one thing you need to realize that we Finns are not very fond of Swedes. Kind of like there is some small animosity between Americans and Canadians. It's the same thing between Finns and Swedes. And we Finns don't generally appreciate anything that Swedes have done. But there's one big exception. There was this one Swedish fellow called Lars Bensjö who invented the LP MUD scheme. And LP MUDs were unique in the sense that it allowed people to actually build on the world, build on the game itself, without any kind of downtime. So whereas in traditional programming, you have a program, you compile it, you abort the execution of the program and restart it again in order to get these fixes in. In the LP MUD, everything was like interpreted and it was a possibility to develop it on the run all the time by a whole range of different people. So what Lars Bensjö did in 1989 was that he released the first version of the LP MUD driver and he opened up a MUD called Genesis in Sweden. And as mentioned, the LP MUDs include a special coding language called LPC for Lars Bensjö C. It looks very much like a hybrid between C and C++, which allowed the developer to seamlessly expand on the actual game. Now, there was a bunch of MUDs that followed that based on the same code base, but I believe the only one that is still operating still today, and the one that we represent, is BatMUD. And it opened its doors to the general public on April 14th, 1990. So in roughly, 5 days, we're having our 15th anniversary in Helsinki. In 1991, a MUD called Discworld got started. It's based on the world of Terry Pratchett, for those who are familiar with his somewhat crazy books. And in 1992, Genocide got started, which was one of the first, if not the first, multi-user game in a text environment, which actually focused solely on killing other players.
And just to recap, BatMUD is built around a medieval fantasy theme in which magic is common, orcs, elves, and various other creatures roam the streets. It's loaded with quests, scenic areas, diabolical monsters, and unfathomable treasures. Very unfathomable. What we're excited about was our friend Tackle had obtained a very powerful item created by the most powerful wizard on the MUD. And he paid an ungodly sum for it in game resources and has been spending several months uncovering its secrets. That was one of the charms of this, that he didn't know what the object was powerful. I mean, what it was. Yeah. But it's powerful and it's like a little Pandora's box that won't hurt him. But it's been an item of considerable excitement. He's received a whole lot of communication from folks he's never heard of, just trying to find out, what does this do? What's it been like? How did it go? So that's our best unfathomable treasure. Our world is constantly being developed, and the players can build majestic cities and engage in trade. This is one of the things that makes Bat Mud unique in my experience, and I played about 15 MUDs, is that you were stuck with what was developed for you. You could pick up objects, you could manipulate them. In some places, you could save them over reboots. But in our world, we have craftsmen and merchants who are able to gather resources, amalgamate them, and create something else of their own, and then manipulate them, process, sell them. We interact in scenarios where they take on the aspects of characters from fantasy worlds: wizards, warriors, druids, barbarians, healers, assassins, and which acquire and lose magical powers, and we progress through fantastic adventures involving travel through a wild and wonderful world. We don't always do that in a harmonious way. As Gore said,
you guys don't actually make it easy on us sometimes.
Well, you know, it's like having a large family. If you can get some of them to be fighting and feeding off each other, it's less maintenance for us. Yeah. And one of the nature aspects of our game is that there is a large international community. And two of the strongest components are the Finnish players — this is based in Finland — and the American players. And as they resolve ideological differences, come to understandings, it's not always pleasant. It's usually pretty painful, but it's a powerful experience.
What you see is a screenshot of the actual game. Somewhat crude, but it works. No fancy 3D graphics, no enormous sound effects and so forth, just plain text. Still, somehow, or maybe because of this, it intrigues thousands and thousands of players every day. Now, as mentioned, Bat Mud got started in 1990, and it got started as a school project at the Helsinki University of Technology by a student called Janne Frösen. And originally it was being run on a server called batman.hut.fi. And due to this silly name, Batman, the mud also got its name, Batmud. Now this server also happened to be the NFS server, network file server, for the workstation in the computer labs. And eventually the owners of that lab weren't very happy about having a text-based game sitting there and eating up all the resources. So disk accesses were being timed out and so forth from like real users. So Batmud got evicted from that lab, and it merged with another mud in another city, Tampere, and pretty much the same thing ensured. So it had to move again and again and again. And this is pretty typical for upstart muds. They start out fairly small, usually in school-based campuses, and before long the administrators realized that this game is starting to eat up too much resources, both computer resources as well as like man hours to run, and it has to be moved and merged with other games in order to remain successful. Now in 1992, the admins of Batmud realized that this model of constantly moving the game around to different servers around in Finland wasn't going to be a very lasting and nor a good way of handling the actual mud. So they decided to take a more formal approach to ensure the continuity of the game and to avoid having to jump between the universities. Hence, a non-profit organization called Balanced Alternative Techniques was formed to support Batmud's development and in part handle the finances required to operate a game of this size.
The social aspects of Batmud. We have over 50,000 characters from all over the world. It is a very large, active community, and the number is skewed only slightly due to the fact that in ancient times, players were allowed to have more than one character. But as you could imagine, some sleight of hand would occur, where people would use one character to accumulate some things, transfer resources to another, or create characters to harass other players, and we shut down on that. But try as we might, we can't pare down this list because people seem to come back from the grave. They'll be gone for a couple years and then re-engage just as vigorously as if they had never left. And those of us who are still there remember them and greet them warmly back into the fold. And it's astonishing how quickly they reintegrate and redevelop their prominence. We have representatives from all age groups. In my experience, most of the people were college students, started out young and reckless, and then they would talk their friends into playing, like, hey, why won't you do anything with me? Well, I got this thing going on, and they would build small pockets. But we do have some people who are even older than me, and they may be represented on some of those cave drawings that I mentioned earlier. And we have them up to in excess of 50 years old. And it's just fun to see how they interact with the younger, more aggressive players we usually get seasonally when the new university season starts, the school year. You'll get an influx of brash, arrogant, reckless sons of bitches. Cover her ears, please. That we have to keep in line by just social standards that people have. The player killing exists on our mud, and it's usually a form of discipline or quick retribution. Somebody betrayed you and you did something. We try to temper the escalation so it isn't big community wars, and it works out. And the large part of our appeal comes from the interaction of players. I've been there for about 12 years now, and I've been not a good player, but I've been a great character, where I've made my treasure has been accumulating relationships, building relationships with people all over the world, to the point that when I was getting married and we were planning a honeymoon, no matter where on the globe my wife suggested, I said, well, we could always just swing by and visit so-and-so from the mud, where she got utterly frustrated and left the planning to me. Yeah. And much of the content on BatMud is built to support collaboration. In some cases, it's the key to our survival. One of the things we'll expand on later is that this is a game where the people contribute by playing, and then later they can progress into contribute by coding or supporting the content in one way or another. Even as a player, one of the things I would do for some of the non-American wizards would be to correct their English when they would make room descriptions. I would take the paragraph and rewrite it for them so that it would flow into something sensible. And there's that kind of collaboration all throughout the mud on every level. And it goes right from you playing up to when you become the admin of the game and have to manage its resources, the internal economies, every element of the game. Okay? Oh, and there's secret societies.
Yes, Chris briefly touched upon, it's also possible for players to create their own guilds and societies where they can hang out with their friends and have a common way of communicating and so forth. And there's a whole bunch of small interest groups within the game itself that are run like these secret societies. For example, somebody's interested in motorcycles, so he creates his own secret society and starts chatting with other people across the world about those motorcycles. It's fairly neat, actually. Now, a game of this size with players and developers and administrators from all across the world, it's quite tricky to try to somehow make it go in a specific direction. And actually, we pretty much given up hope of trying to really efficiently manage this kind of like chaos that we have online. So we accept that it's a state of controlled anarchy, where different players have different views about what they want to do in the game. We don't tell them that today you have to go out and kill that dragon. They can decide whatever they want to do on the game. But what we do instead is that we provide the tools to manage the communities. With tools, I mean both technical tools, meaning the ability to create these subgroups of interest, and also we try to provide the means, meaning that we arrange, we as organizers arrange at times different kind of events that bring people together from across the world. Also, some players have decided to run these face-to-face conventions, and we're going to be seeing some disturbing pictures that have survived from these events later on. And finally, when a player gets bored or decides that, hey, this looks pretty neat, maybe I can develop it even further, I have a good idea about what Batman lacks, we give them the option of becoming one of the developers. And that's pretty much actually how everybody of our currently active administrators have gotten started as well. For example, me, I've started BatMud in, was it 1990? I hung around the game for 5 or 6 years and decided that, hey, maybe I should be developing it instead. So I applied for what we call immortality, which means that I got coding rights on the game. I was suddenly able to write a whole bunch of code and write new environments and systems to it. And eventually, after some years, I moved on to become one of the admins of the game.
Mud conventions. This is something that surprises me, because when I first was playing online, non-online people had the perception that we were freaks hiding in our basement, and the reason we were online was that we couldn't interact socially. But the one thing I found right away was that as soon as people started making connections online, they couldn't wait to meet in person. People would find out where each other was from. It's like, hey, let's meet in New York. Let's do this. We got to go see this movie together. And in BatMud, we have no shortage of that. We're here to represent Froggy. All these guys play BatMud with us. And we'll perhaps expand this role. One of our big things here in America is a bunch of us go camping out in Western Indiana in a godforsaken little dirt scrabble nowhere. But the beauty of it is that there's nowhere to go, nothing else to do but be there with each other. So people who've been playing this game forever, they say, I'm glad I finally got to meet you. BatMud supports this. They, in Finland, have had many what they call boat cons. There's a ferry that runs between Helsinki and Sweden, and the Finns would get on the boat on their side and then party their way over to Sweden. The Swedes would get on, party their way back, and it was just a couple days of raucous revelry and interaction. And they've done at least 8 of those. There's cons where they'll gather in the remote villages of Finland or even other parts of Europe. And some of them are small, and some have gone up to 150 attendees. Oh, Vegas con. Well, I can't tell you about that because that stays in Vegas. And one of the things that BatMud does to support this may seem very minor, but a part of the Bat page is focused on the community building, the conventions, and they promote the attendance and maintain an extensive gallery of photos. And what's that?
Evidence.
Yes, evidence. But one of the things is I always hear from people say, hey, I saw your picture on there, and there's you and your son, and I never imagined that. And it's just one of the ways that strengthens for those who can't get to get, like, I've never seen you guys, I've seen you in person, but I couldn't wait to get here and say, hey, these are the guys that I've been hanging out with doing this for all these years. So for the fact that people assume we were just getting online to get away from them, it draws us right back into a circle where we would go out to Indiana, do the camping, and it would take me 11 hours to drive back, and I see that some people had been online 10 hours. They had gotten home, and within an hour, they were online and telling everybody about the convention.
Speaking of CampCon, the upper two pictures are photos taken at various CampCon events. Yeah, I've tried to handpick the pictures that actually feature women, trying to trick you into believing that we actually have girls playing this game. seriously. We do have some women playing the game, and it's been pretty neat to also see more than just friendship forming between our players, sometimes even across the countries. And I doubt that would have been possible without the means of Batmud combining people. So the first two pictures are from CampCons. As you can see, there's actually tents there, so geeks who are used to sitting in dark basements working on their computers actually have to dig out a tent somewhere and set it up and try to live in the wilderness. I don't think there's any bears or dangerous creatures around, but it's an interesting experience. I was there last year. And the bottom picture is from Vegas. More girls. Now, these photos are from Finland, Finnish conventions. The first one is from a big Finnish geek convention called Assembly. Batmud was one of the principal sponsors of that convention last year, so we were there with a fairly large crowd. And the second picture is actually our developers. We arranged one of these like large sailing boats for our disposal for a day and went out sailing with the developers and had some nice dinner and so forth and planned the future of the game. All right. Now, many people may think that MUDs are pretty outdated. It's just text-based games nowadays, and well, at the same time, the market is being flooded with these really fancy 3D games, World of Warcraft and EverQuest 2s, and you name it. And I'm not trying to diss any of these graphical, massive multi-user games. Heck, I play World of Warcraft myself. But you can't really like avoid doing some kind of comparison between these two. Now, the good thing about these massive games is that they have, for one, graphical appeal. They appeal to a really broad range of people that look for a game that is very easy to get into. Fancy graphics. They have very good client softwares that are easy to use, even by people who aren't experienced in this kind of games. And the companies that run these games have an enormous amount of money for their disposal, so they're able to like do really efficient marketing and be present at all of the big conventions and so forth, just like trying to sell their game. And of course, they have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of players, which is a great benefit. However, they are not without flaws. When you have this development project of this size, as for example World of Warcraft, it has a whole lot of development overhead. Just developing a single new dungeon requires at least 5 different people. You need to have the game designer, you need to have the programmer, you need to have the graphic artist that design all the 3D sketches and so forth. Whereas on a MUD, it's enough that one fellow has a good idea and we give him the right to implement it into the game. And that's all it takes. Also, MUDs have no graphics. They are text-based. What this means in practice is that we don't limit the player to see things the way that we want to see them. Every player is free to use his own imagination to vision that big fiery dragon.
But I will point out, people go friggin' crazy if you just flash an ASCII bunny on the screen.
Also, text allows us to have a more advanced communication system. If you looked at any of these like 3D big games, it's very hard to have 1,000 people talking to each other at the same time, because most of the screen is reserved only for these fancy graphic stuff, and you have like a really small box somewhere in the lower corner for the actual chatting. And this is not true with the MUDs. In MUDs, the communication aspect is one of the most important things in the whole game. What's more, MUDs tend to be free. That's true with Batmud as well. It doesn't cost you anything to start playing the game or even to play the game further. It's totally free of charge. We don't force you to buy any kind of software to play. We don't charge any kind of monthly subscription fees to play. Also, MUDs tend to be run on a single server, whereas these really large games, they are split into different shards or realms or whatever. Which means that the players are constantly interacting with each other all the time, instead of being spread out over a multitude of servers. This, in turn, leads to a more tightly knit community.
I can't compare any of those graphical games to the MUDs because I don't have time. If I have time to get online, I got time for Bat MUD and to check my Hotmail. That's it. The future of MUDs. How do we compete with these these online? They got slick graphics. They got tens of thousands of users. They seem to have everything going for them. But what I found was that with our MUD, it's got a sterling reputation. It's consistently entertained for 15 years now, coming up in 5 days. And I found that everybody who goes off to play StarCraft or World of Wonders or Asherton's Call or this, they always come back. And I don't know what appeal that is other than my own perspective of the enduring strength of the relationships that people have and the complexity of our game. I played about 15 different MUDs over the years, but I've only played Bat for the last 12. And I have gone back and looked at some of the earlier MUDs I played, and I just cry because I see nothing's been updated. The quests are still the same. I could run myself from level 1 to 20 in a matter of hours, what used to take me months before. And I would get frustrated by the actual elements of the library where, you know, if you would say go east, and there wasn't an east to go to in a certain room, the response back would be something like, what? And it was just weird after all these years to see that nobody ever took those and made better commands like you can't go that way or try another direction, something. So I don't know how it is that we're able to compete, yet we are. Our subscription, user base is so strong. And when BatMud does have financial needs to upgrade servers, the response from the players is swift and generous. In fact, sometimes they holler when we don't have an open donation period because they want to give some money and get a game resource from it. As I said, I think our game is the most difficult. It's the guild system is complex. The fact that the players can create so much within it instead of just being limited to what the other guy coded for you, drop this, light this, hand this to that monster. And then these other online games tend to be trend-based, and this is what I was saying earlier. I see people go and run off and do the new exciting thing and then come back to us. And maybe that's a good thing, that it gives them a break away from being with us, and they won't get frustrated of having to do the same things over and over, and then they come back rejuvenated like a sailor coming home to port.
Right. Now, in many cases, these MUD bases or the base code for MUDs are publicly available. They're like open source. So it's pretty easy for anybody to just go and download a copy of a MUD and start running their own MUD. However, with the different entertainment industries are becoming more and more interested in running their own massive games, it's becoming increasingly difficult to really like efficiently market your own new upstart MUD. And I myself very subjectively predict that it's not maybe a good idea to start your own MUD unless you have a really good idea about what makes it unique, what makes it possible to sell it. BatMud is in a lucky position that we already have a very stable player base. We have daily some 2,000, a little over 2,000 different players logging on, and we have some 100 developers working on the game. All right. The fact that MUDs are free is a major reason for their position on the periphery of the internet. They don't look professional. They have no advertising budget. Well, BatMud has a small advertising budget, but still. They have high barriers to entry, and magazines won't review them. The fact that they have a direct connection to the imagination ensures that they can never die, so long as people have imaginations. And this is true for BatMud as well. We are constantly expanding on the world, creating new content, creating new challenges for people. And basically, we invite anybody to try us out, check us out.
And we are indebted to our players. Without our players, it would just be throwing a party that no one attends. So we wanted to thank you and invite you to come and stay and figure out what tackles Pearl does. Thank you. Oh, any questions? Go ahead.
Here's a kind of a software development question. How do you manage a code base that large? I mean, are there tools built into the MUD driver itself to manage such a large number of source files? Or, not having developed a MUD myself for an LP, what tools do you use to manage that massive amount of code?
Well, first of all, this is a bit of a technical explanation. The MUD itself includes like a virtual state machine. And we allow different developers, we give them different kind of access, what they can do with their code. So there is like an abstract layer that protects, let's say, stupid developers from breaking the actual game. And since this is all like interpreted, it's fairly easy to develop one of these like security layers around it. As far as managing the source code itself, we are using CVS for example, versioning control, and we have limited which directories, for example, some specific developers can access files in and so forth. So, but even still, there is a certain sense of controlled chaos, even the development of the game.
And what's that element? The term escapes me, where they've also compartmentalized a number of the things. Like I was messing around with making clothing the other day, and I can't think of what that term, I want to call it continent. Well, but there's something in that but it's that sort of thing where I was trying to make clothing for a bunch of people, just generating it. And in the old days, you would have done that manually, and if you had done it wrong, you could have risked imperiling the resources of the game.
What? Inheritance?
Yeah. And what they've done now is they've broken up a whole bunch of things where you just simply inherit an item that already exists, the code is working, it's clean, efficient, and then you can make cosmetic changes to it. And this ensures a consistency throughout the MUD. Objects that you create aren't going to break it. We used to have, it was a big hazard in the old days, so somebody making something spiffy that suddenly calls are spiraling out of control, you guys are lagged, and the red light comes on.
Okay, here's another technical software development question. Does the MUD driver game have like a built-in database system, or what kind of database software do you use on the back end to manage all those objects?
Well, the MUD driver itself has a small built-in database, or it actually has a table structure that allows us to store data. But in addition to this, we use the MySQL database in the back end, and we have a fairly advanced way of using MySQL. Since we replicate all the MySQL data in real time to a multitude of servers. For example, we have a web server that runs our discussion groups, and those are like mirrored in real time from the actual game itself. But basically, we run MySQL in the back end.
Yes,
Well, I think we started out with a Spark Station 2 sometimes, a long, long time ago. Then it got upgraded into a Spark Station 10 or a clone of the Spark Station 10. Then it was an Ultra 10, I think, at some point. And nowadays we're running on Intel-based hardware. So we have a dual, what the heck are they called? It's one of these AMD 64-bit processors. Yeah, Opterons with, I think it's 4 gigs of memory and so forth. That's like our primary server at the moment. And then we have, as mentioned, replicated a lot of our like really CPU-intensive services to run on other servers as well. So we're not just like stuck with having everything run on one single server.
And you guys don't remember the days when we had to play in a queue where the... Well, the resources were so limited that you would sometimes sit in this queue waiting to play for up to 2 hours. And that was one of the astonishing things, that people would be grudgingly cheerful about it. And
I think the way it works is because you still allow people to talk, to each other.
Right, there was that queue channel where...
Yeah, they would just sit in queue and talk and leave queue.
Right.
Having, talk to who they needed to talk to.
Right. So. And the active players could monitor that channel because they, be interacting that way. So, but we've got more robust equipment now, and we were thinking of reinstalling that queue just for nostalgia's sake. And I swear people will go and sit in it and wait to play and cuss out the management and damn the lag and all that.
The actual mod itself, without any kind of web content and so forth, I think it's up, was it 300 kilobytes per second, roughly bandwidth. And that's just pure text.
And 100 kilobytes is Blackstar cussing us out.
This is one of my favorite topics since I've been developing different kind of beta versions of new map systems. We've been, first of all, we've been playing around with developing line of sight algorithms so that you can, pretty much like NetHack works for those people who are familiar with NetHack. You only see part of the world that you're moving in and so forth, and walls block your vision. But also we've been looking quite a lot at, on the new versions of MUD clients that feature a way of doing tile-based graphics for maps, so that maybe one day we should be able to mimic a little bit, like for example how Ultima 5 looked like, so that you have a small graphical map and then the rest of it is text and other information.
Starting Sunday. Yeah.
But as you can imagine, it's pretty difficult to do, for example, 3D graphics based on like ASCII-based engine. So we're not going to be seeing that very soon.
Actually, BatMud has considerable resources. We've licensed LOL and SFTU, and the royalties we get every time you guys type that on the internet goes right into a private bank account.
Yeah, we're mainly financed by donations. We have a fairly clever treasurer who has understood the value of doing long-based investments as well that generate some additional money to BatMud. But yeah, it's completely based on voluntary donations.
Anything else?
If not, there's more information about the game. Oh, shoot. I'll give you some mint tonight. Finnish booze, you know. Yeah. There's more information about the game on BatMud's website, bat.org, or you can easily join the game by just telnetting using standard telnet client to batmud.bat.org.
Go to 2600. I don't want to tell that anymore. I use it even password for bad.
Yeah, there is.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we've actually written a beta version of it already, but we just haven't put it into game. And for example, Wizards are able to develop the game using SSH nowadays, whereas previously it was only Telnet. So, all right. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope to see at least some of you online in the future.